Welcome to the Hamilton Spectator Newsroom Insider podcast. My name is Joanna Frickitich, and I'm the health reporter here at the Spec. In this episode, we'll talk to reporter Nicole O'Reilly about her tour of a new Mohawk College lab that will give healthcare students the ability to train with equipment that mimics real-life situations. We'll also talk to reporter John Wells about his weekend feature story exploring the myth and reality behind Canada's most famous battle on the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Vimy Ridge. Finally, we'll discuss reporter Mark McNeil's upcoming trip to France and Belgium for the 75th anniversary of the raid on Dieppe and what he hopes readers will get out of taking this journey with him. Thanks for listening. Reporter Nicole O'Reilly was at Mohawk College Friday to tour a new $2.3 million healthcare lab that simulates real-life medical tests. Thanks for talking to us about it, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
So why is the lab important? Can you talk about its significance?
Sure. So the lab is being housed inside the Institute for Applied Health Sciences, which is a building at McMaster University, and it's a partnership between the university and Mohawk College, and it's where applied health sciences students go, so like nursing students and people who are learning to be ultrasound technicians and operate that kind of equipment. And the lab offers students the opportunity now to use simulated equipment, so a simulated ultrasound equipment that would show students what it's like to give an ultrasound to a patient in the real world without actually having to be out and dealing with patients.
And when you went for the event, my understanding was that it was a funding announcement. So can you talk to us about how you got the tour?
Sure. So yes, it was the province was there to announce $2.3 million in support of this new center for health care simulation. And while we were there, I had the opportunity to meet with Paul Armstrong, who's a vice president academic at Mohawk. And he actually started his career at the college by working at that institute. And one of the first jobs that he had that he shared was actually going around and driving to old healthcare centers and picking up old ultrasound equipment. Sometimes it didn't even work, and they would bring it back for the students to work on to try and learn. And so he has seen this huge transformation in going from, you know, equipment that sometimes didn't even work, that was very outdated, to having this state-of-the-art technology at the center. So he offered to show me around the whole building, which is three levels. And we looked at ultrasound equipment and x-ray equipment and met with some students, and also had the opportunity to see some of the simulators that they have that are mannequins that actually simulate real-life patients that were really cool.
And can you describe the lab for us? What was it like?
So it's not a confined lab in a singular space, as you would think. So where the announcement happened is the new sonography lab, and that's where they'll have eight simulated ultrasound machines that students would get to work with. So they had one there today, and the rest of them will be up and running this month. And that's part of phase one of the development of this new lab. And then also on the main level, they're renovating a bunch of library space and turning it into kind of like practical drop-in classrooms where students, instead of going and studying books, can drop in and actually study using technology and using their simulated patients. And upstairs is where all the mannequins that I was talking about are, including one mannequin who they nickname Apollo, and he blinks and he breathes and he bleeds and he can go into cardiac arrest and can actually die and be revived. And it provides students the opportunity to actually work with what appears to be a real patient in simulated scenarios.
And what struck you the most when you were on your tour?
I would say that meeting Apollo he's kind of creepy, and it was really interesting to see, you know, him breathe, and he was coughing and complaining of pain. And the other interesting part that was mentioned is in the basement, they're actually looking at turning space into a research space for imaging technology.
That's great. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It was 100 years ago on Easter Monday, April 9th, that Canada's most famous battle took place on an escarpment of land in North France called Vimy Ridge. John Wells is here to talk about his feature on the legend of the battle. Thanks for coming, John.
Thanks, Jill.
So how did this story come about?
It was one of those ones where a reader sort of got the ball rolling. a guy named Steve Oliver emailed me a few months ago and said that he was doing the Vimy trip with his wife, Barb, because Barb's grandfather, Herbert Fearman, served at Vimy Ridge and was given a medal for his service there, the Distinguished Service Order. And so Steve wanted to know if I was interested in doing a piece on the anniversary of Vimy Ridge and on the Fearman angle. And so Steve was very enthusiastic about the story. As you know, we often we'll hear from readers who are very into the topic. Mm-hmm. You know what that's like. And as often happens, I floated that idea past Cheryl, my editor, and she said to go for that. And so Steve Oliver and their family connection became sort of the hook for the story initially, that there was this local angle. And then with the anniversary coming up, I said to Cheryl, you know, there'd be a lot of media doing pieces on the anniversary of Vimy Ridge, so this would be our local sort of in to the broader piece on the 100-year anniversary of Vimy Ridge and the meaning of it and the history of it. And so that's how it sort of developed, but then it sort of gathered layers from there.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you go about putting together a feature like this? It runs more than 3,000 words and has to bring a lot of elements into the mix.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I enjoy it in the end, I guess, when it's all over. And I've done a few of these now so war stories. I did one on the 100th anniversary of the start of the First World War back in 2014, like a lot of media was doing back then as well. So I had a bit of practice from that where you're trying to give a history lesson of sorts, right? So I'm doing a lot of research on the war and how it started and what happened, and with Vimy Ridge, the same thing. But then you're also trying to incorporate the local angle, and that's what we're always trying to do with our stories. That, you know, perhaps the national papers aren't doing as much. You're trying to find, you know, people who can relate to the story in Hamilton and have some connection to the story. So it's sort of trying to find those local angles and then finding a way to bridge them all together within the broader context of the story about the war. So with this one, like I said, you know, it started with this Steve Oliver and his family connection, and then meeting a couple other people who had family connections who served in the war, and then also exploring the broader themes of the meaning of Vimy Ridge, the symbolism attached to it, and looking into the Spectator's old files back from 1917 on microfilm, and trying to contextualize the story. What was the story back then? What did it mean to people back then? What does it mean now? And then, like I say, trying to sort of link all that together. So in the end, I have this big pile of stuff on my desk, in sort of different aspects. You know, the history, the symbolism, the meaning, the local people, and trying to link them together into one feature that hopefully makes it for a coherent read.
And what do you like about doing these types of stories, the big sweeping historical pieces?
I think I do enjoy delving into the past and trying to learn about, you know, what it was like back then. I mean, I mentioned the microfilm. So, you know, Tammy Dance, you in the library, got me set up on our microfilm reader, and you're looking, you know, I'm reading Spectators from 1917. And so I use that in the story, sort of this, you know, even what ads were running in the paper back then, you know, for cars and clothing and so on. You know, even as the Spectator's publishing the names of all these men, because they were all men, or at least that's what was being published back then, who were being gassed and wounded and killed. And I enjoy that walk down the corridors of history kind of thing, and then trying to bring that to the story, and trying to bring some understanding. I think you go into these pieces with the sort of the accepted conventional wisdom on a historical event, and you're trying to maybe bring something new to it, something different. And then, as with every sort of feature story, you know, as you well know, it's the best part are the people you might meet along the way, and that's sort of an exploration, and it's kind of an organic process. So in this case, you know, like I said, you know, the first guy emailed me, so I met him, I met his wife, and so on, and then but then meeting a couple of other, I met a couple of women, one who was 85, another who was 90, who had family relations who served in the war. So you're meeting people with really interesting backgrounds, and trying to find a way to bring them into the story and their families, and kind of tell their history and their take on it as well. So no, I do enjoy that process. I feel some pressure when it's something as significant as Vimy Ridge, or you know, the First World War certainly as a whole, but Vimy, you know, this touchstone, you know, our editor in chief's father wrote what many consider the definitive story of Vimy, you know, and so, you know, there's pressure there to do a good job and to capture the meeting as best you can, but I do enjoy the process.
And you said that you meet people along the way. What stuck with you the most?
I think, it's interesting. I of the people I met, you know, the last sort of source that I met in my research was just last week. So here I worked on the story for, you know, as I was working on other things, sort of chipping away at it over the course of a few months. And a lot of it was early on was to do with the Fearman angle, which I write about in the story. But then you're meeting other other people, and other angles are showing themselves. So just last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago, I got a phone message from this woman named Betty Lowry, who's 90 years old, lives on the Mountain Brow, who I think she just called the news desk because she had this idea that if we were doing a story on Vimy Ridge, that her father had served and was wounded at Vimy Ridge. And so I called her back and I went and met her, and she's just a delightful woman, and you know, lives alone and is in pretty good health for 90. I thought she looked a lot younger than 90, and we had a great chat. And you know, so just meeting her and having her sort of tell me her family history and what her father was like, and it sort of brought the time and the place to me for the story. And it's just one of those moments, you well know, you get these moments where you're kind of sitting there thinking, well, you know, what a cool job. I mean, I've just met this really interesting woman who has this fascinating story to tell. And she gave me the ending to my story. I mean, I sort of had the story already envisioned about how I would end it. I had a draft sort of written already. But after I interviewed her and learned about her dad, Warren Halstead, and this buddy of his who got killed shortly after Vimy Ridge, I thought, well, no, actually, that's my ending. So just through this process, I got my ending, and I got to meet Betty, and that was pretty rewarding.
And you explore the symbolism of the Battle of Vimy Ridge and seem to be questioning if its lofty place in the culture is justified. Did you set out to do that in the story, or did that kind of evolve?
It kind of evolved. I'm always looking for different angles, obviously, to the story. We're always looking for something different to bring to the story. And I think as I was reading the Spectator's the old stories from 1917, I was struck by how initially the battle was, the headlines were about this great British offensive, because it was only one small part of a broader offensive, and so you're sort of struck by, wow, you know, it wasn't sort of all Vimy Ridge early on. There's a broader context to it, and then reading some articles online and interviewed a professor at Western who takes a real sort of different angle on the battle, that there's the mythology about Vimy Ridge and the slaughter of the war, and you know, it's lionized as this coming of age for Canada and birth of a nation, all that sort of thing. And I started to think that this is one of the themes of the story, is that perhaps it's worth re-examining that and sort of questioning that that notion, but then also backing up enough to realize that, you know, that was the place and the time, and sometimes it's unfair to take the modern lens and reinterpret everything through that, and I wrote that in the story. So it's that balance of, okay, well, let's use that theme in the story, let's explore that, but not go too far with it. And so the piece did kind of evolve into that sort of re-examination of it somewhat, without going too far, but also just telling history of it as well.
It's great. Well, thanks for the insight and sitting down with us.
Thanks for having me.
Reporter Mark McNeil is traveling to France and Belgium in August for the 75th anniversary of the infamous raid on Dieppe. Thanks for giving us a sneak peek, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
So how did this trip come about?
The Royal Hamelin Light Infantry was, of course, involved in the raid on Dieppe 75 years ago. And it was probably the saddest day in Hamelin's history. 197 of them died. So a group of them are going to Dieppe this year. And they asked if I wanted to join them. And I thought that would be an incredible opportunity. The trip not only involves going to Dieppe, but also a number of other prominent battlefields that figure in Canadian history, Vimy Ridge being one, the Somme, Normandy, and it's a 10-day trip, and what I'm doing is the stories about, there's a commemoration in Dieppe, which I'll write from France, and then I was going to accumulate stories and pictures and video to put in a kind of a special section when I get back.
Can you talk about why you think it's so important to make this trip?
It's Canada. Obviously, it's Canada's 150th birthday, and one of the things that defined Canada was the experience on those European battlefields through the last century. So this is a good year to look at that. But the thing that really strikes me about it is that the we're getting at a point in time where there's nobody left from the First World War, and fewer and fewer from the Second World War. And it won't be very long. The people who served in the Second World War are well into their 90s. You know, you see them on our death notice page. And it will not be long where none will be left. And what will be left instead is little pieces of artifacts, you know, a helmet in a basement, or maybe a gas mask or something, or things in museums, and also cenotaphs where you see the names and you wonder about the young fellow who died all those years before. And so we're at kind of a crossover point between a living memory and no one being left who had the experience of being at war.
Mm-hmm. And what are you looking forward to most about the trip?
Well, one of the things that what I've done that's engaged readers of the Spectators is we had an article. I did an article a few weeks ago asking people to contact me with stories and artifacts that they have. And I was inundated with responses, probably about 70, 80. And I had an evening just this week on Tuesday night where a dozen of them came in. And it was an incredibly moving experience with the stories that they told, and also the some of the items that were brought in, you know, letters from relatives. You know, one person brought in their father's helmet. The thing that really was moving was, you know, we forget about it, but in the First World War, they actually used horses. And one fellow came in, a grandson of his of a man who died shortly after Vimy, and he had the bit from the horse, and he was practically in tears telling a story about how he managed to end up with that bit as a memory of his grandfather.
And can you talk about what you're hoping readers will get out of taking this journey with you?
I think it. I'm hoping that it'll help people, you know, think about that period of time, because like I say, it's passing through history, passing through living history, and you know, people learned a lot from the experience of millions of people getting killed and what wars can lead to and how things can escalate. You know, the First World War is a classic example of that. And especially these days where the world seems like such a dangerous place, I think it's an incredible reminder of how we need to, you know, sit back and control ourselves. because it's not so hard to slip into a horrific war that could involve numerous countries.
And you have made history writing a specialty of yours here at The Spectator. Can you talk about why you enjoy writing about history?
Well, an unkind person might say that I've reached a point in my career that I needed to find stories that I didn't have to run as fast, but that's not the case. Well, one of the things I found in Hamilton is, I know you have found, Joanne, because you are such a good journalist, is that Hamilton has this unbelievable wealth of stories. It is a journalist's dream. And one of the things I found that adds to that is that when you bring a historical component to it, you realize the story that we're doing today is related to a very long history as well. And when you add that context to it, the story even gets more interesting. And that's one of the things that has struck me time and time again.
Well, thank you so much. We're looking forward to reading it. When will it be published?
Well, the stories from Europe will be in August, mid-August, which is the anniversary date, and then into the fall, the section, or it'll run over several days, it'll run in probably September.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joanna.